Accession number 33503, reel 5.
And then we stood up and we were standing by the truck deciding what to do. We could see this river ferry was still there and the old boy was there, the other side of the river. And most of the people were deciding to go onto the bridge, and the convoy started to move again. Then we saw Helga. I forget her real name. I'll call her Helga because it's a German name and it's the one that comes to mind, but it wasn't her real name. I don't even quite remember now whether we knew her name or not, but she walked across to us from where, I don't know. She'd got there somehow, perhaps she'd walked, perhaps she'd been on a cart, we don't know. But she was about 18 years old, German, blonde. Hair was plaited either side. And she walked across to us from somewhere or other. And she started to speak in German. To me, it didn't make sense, obviously. I knew quite a few words, but when people started to talk rapid German, I was lost. And of course, Jan, as always, was there. He spoke to her quite a time. We were saying, what's she saying, Jan? What's she saying? He was saying, wait a minute, let's get the whole story, wait a minute. Eventually he turned to us, he said, she's German, as you can see, she's lost her parents, they've been killed. She thinks if she can get to Düsseldorf, she's got relations there who will look after her. And can we help her on the way? She said, at least if she can get to a American-occupied zone, they would probably have more compassion on her than the Russians. Apparently she was alone in the world and she just had to take her chance on whoever found her. I remember saying to Jan and Bill at the time, I don't know, sounds like trouble to me. I think we ought to drop her right away. But Jan, the ladies' man, he said, not on your Nelly, we're going to see her as far as we can. There's no skin off our nose, we'll lose nothing by it. We got room on the truck. So what's the moan? Well, we couldn't very well argue against that. So we said, right, what do we do? So we decided we would go down, take the truck down the grass slope across the field and beckon to the man with the ferry and get him to take us across. We had to cross this river really to get to Carlsbad. That's what we did. Girl got in the passenger seat. At that moment Jan was driving. We took it in turns later on, but Jan was driving at that moment. I suppose he wanted to get to know the girl better, but me and Bill sat in the back, and we got down to the ferry station and we waved across to this old geezer and he brought the boat over. And we just run the truck on. By this time one or two other people had arrived and they got on as well. I remember the old boy held out his hand for payment. We had no money at all. But there was quite a lot of stuff on the back of this van. And on top was a raincoat, amongst other things. And Jan said to this old boy, raincoat. Gave him the raincoat and he seemed quite pleased. That was his fare for taking us across. So we set off across the river. We got about halfway across and we were looking forward to the bank we were going to land at. There was machine gun fire. We looked across, or we looked back at the lamp, the bank we had just left. And lo and behold, there was about five or six Russian soldiers, holding these Tommy guns, and they'd fired above our heads. And as we looked, they waved their hands, telling us to wait. Obviously, you could see what they meant. Just wait. So, we eventually got to the other side, got the truck off, and we looked over, and the Russians were there. They had the machine gun trained on us. And like I said before, it wasn't all that far away. 100 yards, 200 yards perhaps. And they had us well and truly in their sights. Well, the girl, luckily enough, was out of sight. She was in the driver's seat, in the passenger seat, in the front. And had a bit of cabin over the driver, but there was nothing in the back. Jan drove the truck off. And just a few yards from the landing stage was a road. Small country winding road. We drove onto the winding road. And we looked back and I said, we can't go again. They've got us. They're looking over. They've got field glasses and all on us. And the other people that got off the truck were the same. They just got out and sat down by the bank. By this time, this girl was pretty white with fear. She was shaking like a leaf. And Jan said, we've got to do something fast. By this time, the boat had reached the other landing stage and the Russians were getting aboard, ready to come over. And they were busy getting themselves on the boat and looking more or less at the old boy who was bringing them over. Jan says to the girl, quickly. And with that, she got out and we moved quite a bit of stuff back and she climbed on the back of the truck. And we pushed clothes on top of her, pans on top of her, covered her with all the other gear, and she was underneath. The Russians arrived. And I could understand what people meant when they said they didn't want to stay behind for the Russians. There was about eight of them. And they were, they only looked like ordinary privates, you know. They had this green uniform with a kind of a funny fur hat on. To think that I bought one last year, something like it. Anyway, they started to talk to the people on the bank. One could speak a bit of German. They had machine guns hanging around their necks. They had revolvers in their holsters at their waist. A couple of them had about five or six wristwatches on. They looked a proper uncouth lot. And I remember thinking at the time, if they get their hands on Helga, God knows what's going to happen to her. Anyway, they eventually walked a few yards to us and they came up. We were the only Englishmen there. All the rest of the people were Germans. And Jan spoke to this particular Russian that could speak German a bit. Started to talk to him. And all the time the Russians were looking at this truck and walking round the truck. And Jan told this Russian, he said that we were British troops and we'd come from near Carlsbad. We didn't tell him we were prisoners of war. We thought, well, if he told them that, they might want to take us back and sort of look after us. So Jan took a chance and told him that we were active serving troops. We'd strayed a bit off our territory. But we were going back to our lines. The Russians said, where are they? And the ants just waved vaguely in the distance. And the Russians obviously believed them, because the Russians hadn't taken over this territory at all. But as I said before, by this time, they started to take interest in the gear on the back of the van. The ants said, no, that's ours. We've confiscated that. If you want some stuff, it's plenty over on the road over the other side. And the Russians weren't all too happy with that. They wanted to help themselves, and they started to poke around. Well, we knew darn well that they only had to take the first few things off, and there would be Helga underneath. So, as a last sort of result, last ditch, I grabbed hold of this fur coat and said, look, so I said again, tell them this is worth much more money than they'll ever earn. Let them share it amongst themselves. Jan told them this, and they looked at the fur coat, and there was a radio on top, a little portable radio, and one grabbed hold of that and waved it to us and said, well, I'll take this as well. And with that, they sauntered back to the ferry to go back over. They were obviously probably not supposed to be there. They probably just wandered around. They'd probably come from their units based somewhere nearby, and they were probably looking what they could pinch. And that's the last we saw of them. And we drove a few yards up the road, made sure they weren't there, and Helga got out. She was still petrified, and she got back in the passenger seat, and off we set. The journey to Carlsbad took about 4 days. I don't know how far it was, we couldn't travel very fast, and we had to get off the road at dusk. There were too many little wars going on. At one time we got caught in crossfire between Russian and SS troops. We got out of that with the skin of our teeth. I ought to mention here that we had enough food for the travel for about 4 days anyway. It was on the truck. We had tinned meat, biscuits, even soup. So we weren't bothered on that score. By this time, Ian and the girl were very close. At night we were pulling beside an old barn or an outhouse and kept down amongst the hay. Ian and Helga would go into some remote corner on their own. Bill and I settled down anywhere. In any case, I was beginning to go off Jan a little bit. It was a pity, really, because we had gone through so much together. And to see him making up to this girl gave me the ab-dabs. I mean, she was a proper German, very haughty. And she acted as though she had Jan running around in circles after her. On one or two occasions, she tried to lay the law down to either Bill or I, and I remember once I told her no uncertain language to get stuffed. That caused Jan's hair to bristle. His idea was that she was a poor, defenceless girl with no one but him to turn to. But in my opinion, there was also the other slight reason that I think he was having it away with her. That made her not quite so innocent as she looked. In any case, I couldn't forget the fact that she was a German. There was an occasion when we were again caught up by a small party of Russian soldiers. This time she couldn't hide, and one of them started to make up to her. He Dan's hair again bristled. He had a proper fiery temper to Dan, and he tried to grab hold of a revolver that we had picked up. I think this time I probably saved his life. With a bit of arm waving and back slapping. Also, as something I soon discovered that never failed. Mentioned Stalin to a Russian, you know, Stalin good, Stalin prima. And as you mentioned his name, salute, and you were their bosom pal. They used to fall over you with their faces split wider with huge smiles. Well, this worked on this occasion, and we went on our way again with a sigh of relief. We eventually drove into Carlsbad. It was quite a large town with wide streets, nice tall buildings. There weren't many vehicles on the road, quite a few people walking around, and life seemed going as normal. Most of the vehicles were army vehicles. Anyway, we had never seen an American soldier, but there were quite a few walking around. We came to this kind of crossroads, an on-point duty, directing traffic, an American military policeman, looking very smart, with his immaculate uniform and white helmet. I was driving at the time and pulled in beside him. He looked at us, saw our battered old truck, or more or less sized up the situation. He said, "Limage?" I said, "Yes, prisoners of war, trying to get home." He pointed and said, "Half a mile down the road is a rehabilitation centre. There's quite a few of you guys there, but they will look after you and feed you, and you'll be home in a couple of days." He started to turn away, but suddenly caught sight of Helga, sitting very quiet beside me. "Who the hell's that?" he said. And I remember saying quite cheerfully, "A German girl we'd picked up." "A what?" He was flabbergasted, and he let us know it. He said, "We've been fighting these bastards, and here are you fraternising with them. If you were in the army proper, you would be on a fizzer and put it in the jug." He calmed down a little and looked over the truck and came back and said, "This way," and pointed in the opposite direction. "There is a displaced persons camp, and that's what she is. She would have to go there and take her chances. Take her over the curb, drop her, and get on your way. Her problems are not your problems. Right? Get moving." I drove over to the road leading to the displaced person's camp. There was a slight bend in the road. The hand called out. Drive down a few yards, Dan, just round the bend. When I put the brake on, Jan got down and said, "I'm not going to leave her here. She's not a displaced person. She might finish up in Russia." Well, we did have an argument. Bill joined in, but Jan wouldn't budge. And the girl was shaking with fright. I almost felt sorry for her. And as you probably guessed, she went back in the back of the van again, covered her over with clothes as before. I drove the van round, and we drove back past the policeman. He called out, "Have you dropped her?" And I nodded. And we drove on. This camp was only about a mile down the road. There was a military policeman standing on duty outside. I pulled up. Jan was sitting beside me and the girl was still in the back. I said to Jan, "What now?" Jan said, "Look, let's play it by ear. Leave it to me. I'll go inside and see what the situation is." I said, "Don't forget the girl is underneath all those clothes." Anyway, Bill pulled a few of the clothes back to one side and gave her a bit of air and sat down on the back ready to cover her over again if anybody came up. Ian came out after 5 minutes and said, "There's about 3,000 men in there, packed like sardines. And they've all got to go to Nuremberg, the nearest airfield. And there's only a truck taking them a few at a time. It'll take days. But I've told them we've got transport." They said, "Right, make your own way to the airfield. It'll certainly save you time." And Jan said, "We can drop the girl here. She would be well inside the American zone and pretty safe." So, as before, we drove down the road. Helga got back in the passenger seat and we set off for Nuremberg. It took us a couple of days to get there and we had to get off the road at dusk. We looked around as we drove. Life seemed to be going on quite normal. People were around, seemed to be working. At least there was no fighting. This zone was firmly occupied by the Yanks, and there were plenty of them around. All sorts of vehicles, heavy lorries, trucks, motorbikes. Nobody seemed to pay much attention to us. We eventually got to Nuremberg. Didn't have many things happen to us on the way. We drove a long road into the airbase. I remember there were quite a few black airmen about, and we stopped to ask one of them where we had to report. He seemed quite interested in the girl. Anyway, Jan said, "This is it. You two go into the reception centre, and if possible, put me a place with you. I will drive the girl back to the main road, and she can have the truck. I'll join you in about an hour." Bill and I took a couple of items from the back of the truck, a couple of things we thought we'd take home. I took a suit and a small camera, probably a couple of other little things as well which I can't remember. I know Bill had a radio set and a clock, but we can only take a small amount, we couldn't carry much else. We said goodbye to the girl and then turned the truck round the other way and drove off. It was about midday. I never saw Jan again. Bill and I booked in and we were put in a party of 24. That apparently was one plane load. We were there about 2 days, plenty of food to eat, but sleeping space was very cramped. We didn't care. On the third morning we were taken out to the vast airfield by truck and placed in groups of 24, all over the field. Men in charge said, "Don't move, planes will come to you." And they did. I'd never seen anything like it before. Plane after plane came in. They were small passenger planes, I don't know what type they were, but they taxied up to each group. The men got in and the planes took off. Next stop, Brussels in Belgium. We had one night there under canvas, big canvas camp. as before, food was there, and we soon got down to sleep. The following morning, down to the airfield, and again in groups of 24, we put on Blenheim bombers. In my particular plane, I was particularly lucky. I was the last one on. Some of the chaps were placed in the body of the plane in complete darkness. I was the 24th bloke on, and I sat right in the gun turret. Plastic affair, you could look out and see everything. And believe me, the white cliffs of Dover really are white. We landed on an airfield in Hertfordshire. And as the planes landed, WAFs came running out. One girl to one man. And escorted us into a hangar where there was a band playing. And tables with food on. I remember we had tears in our eyes. Even some of the girls were crying. I suppose it was an emotional moment for us. One of the things we had to do before we ate was to be weighed. I weighed about 8.5 stone, about 2 stone below normal. But I didn't mind, I felt good. I was back in England. England I'd last seen 4 years ago. We were taken to a camp nearby and were driven through the town. There was a bunting across the road with welcome home signs. They certainly expected us, and we felt all the better for it. We were in the camp 3 weeks, being medically examined and given vitamins and all that. And then an hour's train journey, a month to leave in front of me, and I walked down Dynam Road. Rang at number 44. The door opened, and there was a young woman I remember well. A woman whose memory kept me going for 4 years. Mrs. Ince, by name. End of story. There is a small postscript. About 3 or 4 weeks after, I got a letter from Jan, from Blackheath, where he lived. He was quite safe and well. He apparently arrived home. He didn't say what time. I think he gave me a cock and bull yarn, but the story was that he drove the girl back to the road, and he was driving along, and the truck went out of control and went down a ditch. He said he was knocked unconscious. When he came round, the girl had gone. Doesn't seem a very likely story. I mean, I'm not really interested in what happened, as long as he was all right. Because, like I said before, he was a good bloke, and we'd had some grand time together. And that's all you can say.